Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After Midnight.
You know how some names feel cursed the moment you say them out loud, like they don't just belong to a person, but to something that's been waiting for you to speak it. For me, that name was Jerry. Or maybe it was Miguel. I still don't know which one is the real one, or which one answered me that night. I'd moved again, a new house in Denver, just 35 minutes from the suburb where I grew up. That should have been far enough to leave the past behind. Far enough to finally believe that whatever followed me in my mother's house had stayed there when she sold it and moved out of state. I was wrong. The thing I called Jerry, lanky, sleeveless, always at the edges of my sight, seemed to find me no matter where I went. And this time, he didn't come alone. Before I tell you what happened in Denver, I need to go back to something I'd nearly forgotten. It's strange how an object can hold a shadow. When I was a kid, my parents hung a framed advertisement for a local art festival. Nothing remarkable. Bright colors. A few black and white checker tiles across the top. And every few tiles, a tiny portrait of William Shakespeare. It hung by the sunny corner window of our old house for years, harmless there. But one spring, they moved it to the wall at the head of the basement stairs, the stairs that led down to the coldest part of the house. From that day on, everything shifted. The basement had always felt heavy to me, like the air was thicker, a few feet below the ground. Once the picture moved there, the feeling turned from heavy to hostile. Every other time I passed the frame, the images in those little tiles would be different. Sometimes just one Shakespeare face staring down at me instead of four. Sometimes the extra faces would disappear completely. And once, I swear I saw this, one of the tiles held not the familiar playwright, but a twisted, sharp-toothed face that looked nothing human at all. No one else believed me. No one else ever saw it change. But I started timing my trips to the basement so I wouldn't have to catch its gaze. The dogs noticed before the adults ever did. We had two of them, mutts with more instinct than people give them credit for. Every so often, they'd be sleeping peacefully in the family room, and then, as if jolted awake by something unseen, they'd both snap their heads toward the closed basement door and start to whimper. Sometimes they'd even growl, their fur bristling, then retreat sideways to sneak out of the room without taking their eyes off that door. Nothing was ever there, just that picture above the stairs watching. Years later, when my mom was packing up the house to move away, I found that same frame leaning against a wall. The moment I laid eyes on it, a cold wave of dread rolled up from my stomach to my throat. It wasn't nostalgia or grief. It was as if something alive had just noticed me again. I couldn't even hold it. I told my mother I wanted it gone, burned, anything, and she agreed she'd get rid of it. I don't know if she ever did, and maybe that's where Jerry came from, or maybe he was always there, using that frame the way a spider uses a crack in the wall. I'll never know. Denver was supposed to be a clean start, but within a month of unpacking, the nightmares started again. They were always the same, Jerry lurking at the edge of a dreamscape that felt like my old house. And beside him now a stockier man I'd never seen before. Broad shoulders under a baggy t-shirt, jeans that looked loose enough to sag. Short cropped hair. The two of them never spoke. They just watched me from across whatever dream room I was trapped in. When I woke, I'd still feel that pressure of being observed. One night, the line between dreaming and waking vanished. I opened my eyes to the dim orange glow of the nightlight across the room and saw them, both of them, standing at the foot of my bed. Perfect silhouettes, motionless. Jerry tall and angular in a sleeveless shirt. The new one, the one I later called Bobby, shorter, heavier. I froze. I didn't breathe. Then, as if some unseen signal passed between them, they shot away in opposite directions, not walking, not running, but sliding off at a speed too fast for anything human. By the time my eyes adjusted to the dark corners, the room was empty. The next day, I told myself it was sleep paralysis, a waking dream. I even started to believe it, until the name incident. I'd been online half reading some random article when I happened to type the word Miguel. The moment my fingers hit enter, I heard it, a short, dry cough from behind me. Familiar. The kind of cough you recognize the way you recognize someone's laugh. I spun in my chair. No one was there. The room was still, the hallway silent. Thinking it must have been coincidence, I typed the name again. This time, there was a single creak out in the hallway, like a footstep on a board that shouldn't have been moving. My father and his girlfriend were upstairs, and you can hear anyone climbing those steps, you know. But I hadn't heard a thing. I said the name out loud, testing the room, and that's when a sharp chill climbed up my spine as if the air itself turned to ice. I felt, I swear, someone standing right behind my chair, so close it felt as though they could lean forward and whisper into my ear. I turned quickly. Again, nothing. But I heard a faint breeze, like a sigh of air moving around me, though the windows were shut. I never said the name out loud again. Was Miguel Jerry's real name? Or the new one's? Or was it something that both of them answered to? That's the question that's been sitting in the back of my mind ever since, because the night I saw them at my bed wasn't the last time I sensed them. Every so often, just as I'm about to drift off, I'll hear that cough again, or the soft creak of a step in the hall where no one's walking. And the nightmares keep them alive. Jerry in his camo pants, Bobby hovering silent beside him, both of them waiting just beyond the reach of the light. What unsettled me most wasn't the nightmares or even the night I saw them at the foot of my bed. It was the way the house itself seemed to notice whenever I remembered them. The Denver place wasn't old or particularly creaky. No basement, no strange architecture, just an ordinary split level with beige walls and carpet that smelled faintly of new paint. It should have felt safe. But when Jerry returned to my dreams, the temperature in certain corners of the house began to drop as if an invisible draft had opened only for me. The air around my desk would feel suddenly damp and cold, though the heater kept humming. There were no open windows, no logic. Sometimes the silence in the hallway felt charged, like the pause before someone speaks. I'd find myself listening, head tilted, expecting to hear breathing just past the doorway. Every time I stepped into the hall, the feeling would retreat a few steps farther back, like a tide sliding out of reach. The dogs back at my parents' house had always sensed something before I did. Here in Denver, I had no dog, only the nightlight to cut the dark. It cast a dull amber oval across the carpet, just enough to catch the edges of furniture and to give me a silhouette if anyone was standing there. I started keeping a journal, not because I wanted to, but because I was scared I'd forget the details or convince myself later it was all in my head. I wrote down the cough, the creak, the name Miguel, the temperature dips. One entry still rattles me when I reread it. Woke 3:14 a.m., felt someone brush past my left shoulder, no sound, smelled faint iron like blood. Couldn't move for a few seconds, whole room colder after. The smell happened more than once, and it was faint, metallic, sharp at the back of the throat. It would appear for seconds and vanish, leaving me scanning the floor as if I might find a penny dropped somewhere. I began sleeping with the lamp on, but that didn't help. Light didn't keep them out. It only made the shadows lean longer across the walls. When you spend too many nights half awake watching your own ceiling, you start to memorize every stain and seam. So when something new appears, even for a heartbeat, you know it. About a week after the Miguel incident, I woke to see a darker patch blooming in the upper corner above the closet. At first, I thought it was a trick of the light, a slow gathering blur from the lamp's glow. Then it began to stretch, pulling itself down toward the wall like ink bleeding through water. I sat up too fast, the mattress springs creaking, and in that instant, the blotch snapped back into the corner and thinned out until it was gone. My heart was pounding so hard I half expected to feel a hand press me back down. Days bled into each other after that. I still went to work, still answered messages, but my nights belonged to them. The dreams became sharper. In one, I found myself standing again at the top of the basement stairs in my old house, that cursed art fest picture at eye level. Only now the little black and white Shakespeares were blinking, like photographs caught halfway through closing their eyes. One by one, the lids opened again to reveal irises that weren't eyes at all. They were tiny, perfect versions of Jerry's grin. In the dream, I tried to tear the picture off the wall, but it wouldn't budge, as if nailed into the bones of the house itself. I'd wake gasping, my fingers clawing at the sheets. A friend suggested maybe Jerry wasn't a ghost in the usual sense. Maybe he was something attached to me, something that used memories and objects to anchor himself. That idea scared me more than the thought of a regular haunting, because if it was attached to me, there'd be no moving away from it. The presence I called Bobby, shorter, heavier, always just behind Jerry in the dreams, remained faceless. In every nightmare, his head was lowered, shoulders hunched forward as if ready to spring. In waking glimpses, it was always a silhouette darting out of sight. Sometimes, if I stayed perfectly still in the dark, I'd feel the air shift on one side of the bed as though someone had just leaned in to listen. Once I heard what sounded like knuckles brushing the wall behind my headboard, a soft graze, deliberate enough to make me shiver. I tried saying the name Miguel again once, a test whispered in daylight while the sun poured across my desk. Nothing happened at first. Then the lamp on the end table blinked off and on, just once a tiny stutter of the bulb, and I felt that old dread rise like cold water filling my lungs. I haven't said it since. Evenings became a countdown to the hour I dreaded most, that thin stretch of time between 2 and 4 in the morning when the house felt as though it was holding its breath. If I drifted into sleep during that window, I knew the dreams would come. If I stayed awake, I sometimes heard the cough in the hallway. There was no winning. The most frightening moment came on a rainy night when wind rattled the loose gutter outside my bedroom window. I was awake, sitting up against the headboard reading, when the mattress shifted, just slightly, as if someone had pressed a hand down near my feet. I froze. The room smelled faintly of damp earth and that thin iron tang. Before I could move, a whisper scraped the air, low, male, rough around the edges, right beside my ear. It said only one word. I think it was my name. But it sounded almost amused. I left every light on that night and didn't sleep till dawn. By early spring, the strain of it began to show. I caught myself checking corners before stepping into a room, keeping my shoulders slightly hunched as if I expected a tap on the back at any moment. Even ordinary sounds like the hum of the fridge, the sigh of the heater, felt like whispers just below hearing. The worst were the nights when I'd dream of Jerry, but wake to find the dream hadn't quite let go of me. I'd lie there in the half-light, eyes open, and still sense him standing at the foot of the bed. I never saw his face again, only that lean silhouette, like a shadow stretched too tall and too thin. Bobby remained crouched at his side, heavier, quieter, head tilted, as though he were listening to something I couldn't hear. Sometimes they didn't move. Sometimes they slipped away in opposite directions, vanishing before my eyes as if the walls had swallowed them. I tried every rational thing first, new bulbs for the flickering lamps, a space heater for the cold drafts, a nightlight in the hallway. I moved my bed to the opposite wall, switched pillows, even burned a lavender candle because someone online said the scent eased nightmares and nothing changed. The cough still came from the hallway, the shadows still gathered at the edges of the light, and the house still seemed to know when I spoke certain names. One late afternoon, I decided to confront my fear head on. The sun was low and the living room window pane threw long amber bars across the floor. I stood in that light and spoke aloud, not to Jerry, not to Bobby, but to the air itself. I said I wasn't afraid anymore, that I wanted them to leave. I even said Miguel's name once, just above a whisper. For a long minute, nothing stirred, then a single creak echoed from the top of the stairs, as if someone had put a foot down slowly, deliberately. The light shifted slightly, darkening the wall behind me. I felt that cold ripple up my spine, but I didn't run. The house stayed silent after that, and I couldn't decide whether it was victory or warning. That night, I dreamed again, of the old Art Fest picture, the checkerboard border with the tiny Shakespeare faces. In the dream, the picture was propped at the foot of my bed, and all the faces were turned to look at me. One of them smiled, the kind of smile that hides teeth. I woke with my heart hammering and the sense that something had just moved out of sight at the corner of the room. In the daylight, I almost laughed at myself. Almost. But when I called my mother later that morning just to hear a familiar voice, she told me she still had that picture packed in a box in her garage. She said she'd thought about throwing it out, but every time she went to do it, she changed her mind. "Something about it creeps me out," she admitted. Hearing that unsettled me more than the dream. It felt like a thread that hadn't been cut, like the picture still had a claim on us both. The last encounter came on a wind-stirred April night. I'd fallen asleep in the armchair in the living room with the TV murmuring low. A soft cough woke me, the same cough I'd heard for years. I opened my eyes just in time to see two figures step through the doorway from the dark hall. For a heartbeat, they were as solid as any living man. Jerry in his tank top and camo pants, Bobby hunched beside him in a pale t-shirt. Their heads were turned toward me as if they'd caught me intruding on a private conversation. Then, in perfect sync, they walked forward and kept walking until they melted into the glow of the TV screen itself, leaving the room empty, but for the sound of my own breathing. I didn't move for a long time after that. When I finally did, it was only to turn the TV off. The silence that followed was so complete, it felt like a held breath. Since then, the nights have been quieter, but not in the way that brings comfort. It's the stillness of a predator crouched in the grass, the feeling that something patient is waiting just beyond sight. Waiting for me to speak the wrong name or look too long into a dark corner. I've stopped saying Miguel out loud. I don't keep a journal anymore. Writing it down feels too much like inviting them back. People ask if I believe in ghosts. I tell them I believe in persistence, in the way certain presences refuse to fade, no matter how many houses you leave behind. I believe some things follow us home because they never really leave us at all. And every now and then when the house settles after midnight, I swear I hear that soft cough again, as if Jerry's reminding me he's still there, just waiting for the next time I dare to call him by name.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.